The Tom Woods Show, episode 1056.
Prepare to set fire to the index card of allowable opinion. Your daily dose of liberty education starts here. The Tom Woods Show.
Folks, if you're looking to get a leg up at work or start a side hustle, then check out Skillshare. Tom Woods Show listeners get a free month of unlimited access to all 17,000 classes. Sign up at Skillshare.com/Woods. That's Skillshare.com/Woods to start your free month of unlimited learning. Hello, everybody. Tom Woods here. I am very glad to be playing for you this oldie but goodie that you probably have not heard. This is an interview I did in 2012 with the great Walter Block, who's been a guest on this show a number of times. Walter, of course, is the great libertarian economist, libertarian theorist, very prolific. You'll hear the intro a little bit more about Walter. But I did an interview with him back when I was hosting the old Peter Schiff show, filling in for Peter. And it's a great little interview where we cover a whole bunch of interesting, edgy kind of topics. And I thought, what the heck? You know, I'm frantically running around trying to move my house down the street, so now's a good time to play this for you. So I hope you enjoy it. Here we go. And we are back on the Peter Schiff Show. Tom Woods in for Peter, joined by Walter Block, libertarian superstar you guys have been asking for. Every time I say, who should I have on the program, it's always, we got to have Walter. And so we have finally made this happen, even though poor Walter is out on the West Coast and it's super early for him. So we're very grateful to have him with us. Walter is the Harold E. Worth Eminent Scholar Chair in Economics at Loyola University, New Orleans. And as I've already sort of greased the skids for this by telling you guys about his credentials. I mean, he's got more peer-reviewed articles than, you know, 10 or 12 highly credentialed individuals. It's really quite astonishing. You can check out his CV at walterblock.com. But if you have a self-esteem problem and you feel like you're not accomplishing enough in your own life, don't go to walterblock.com. It's just going to make you feel worse. Walter, welcome to the Peter Schiff Show.
Thanks. You're embarrassing me. I'm delighted to be with you.
Well, now, I just want to talk about a whole range of things while we've got you here. I know people are going to be calling in. They want to ask you. I've told people you're the guy to ask the hard questions of. But I had a call yesterday about reparations for slavery. And I sort of gave an answer that I think is consistent with your view, but it's not just reparations for slavery. What about the issue of the American Indians and if they were defrauded of their land a long time ago? You have a view that's different on this of how libertarians should think about these issues than, say, Murray Rothbard did. What is your view on this stuff?
Well, I don't know that my view is different than Murray's. I think it's compatible. My view is, first of all, there's no statute of limitations on justice.
That's where I think it is incompatible. I thought Rothbard took the view that after a certain amount of time, we got to just say, look, you know, theft happens.
I'm not sure. You might well be right. But in my view, there is no statute of limitations on justice. That is, there's no formal statute of limitations on justice. There is an informal one. And that is that possession is 9/10 of the law. So he who wants to overturn extant property rights has got to have the burden of proof, take on the burden of proof to show that the present extant property titles are unjust. So let's suppose that there's an Indian or a black person who says, well, you know, my great-great-great-grandfather, his land was stolen, or his labor was stolen, as in the case of slavery, and that their piece of land or that their plantation really belongs to me, well, the burden of proof is on him to show this. So the natural statute of limitations comes in when you realize that the further back in history you go, the harder it is to prove anything because things get lost. And the further back you go, the less likely there was a written language, and then it becomes very, very difficult to prove anything. So I think libertarianism is very, very radical in theory. That is, you can go back 10 million years if you want to just pick a silly number, and if you can prove it, you get the property. On the other hand, in terms of actual changing of property rights, libertarianism is pretty conservative in the sense that, as I say, the further back you go, the harder it is to prove anything. Now, take the Japanese Americans whose land and boats and property was stolen from them in 1942 or 1941 or whenever that was. Well, we had a written language then. That wasn't too far back in history. it would be relatively easy for them to prove that they can, that certain things were stolen from them, and that their ring over there that's got their grandfather's name on it in Japanese and now is on the finger of some white person really should be returned. So that would be what I see as the libertarian view, and I think it's compatible with Murray Rothbard in the sense that there is an informal statute of limitations time, but no legal one.
Right.
Namely, if your grandfather stole something from my grandfather and I can prove it, well, then I should get it back, Tom. Sorry.
No, that's, I would give it to you without you didn't even have to ask me.
Now,
now the other thing is another area that you've done a lot in, and I want to talk in the next segment about your book, Defending the Undefendable, which is sort of this classic all over the world and everybody's influenced by it. But you've done an awful lot of important work on libertarianism and the environment. But what is particularly interesting to me is that you have also differentiated yourself from what is sometimes called free market environmentalism, which on the surface of it sounds like that would be great. So can you sort all this out for us? What is free market environmentalism, in quotation marks, and what is Walter Block environmentalism?
Well, there is this group, PERC, P-E-R-C, Political Economy Resource Center in Bozeman, Montana. Rick Stroop and Terry Anderson, and they're pretty good. They do believe that private property rights are the solution to environmental problems. They're not the enemy of environmental problems. My only problem with them is that they're Chicagoans, and they're not really radical libertarians. So you get some sort of tweaks and some sort of differences that I would have with them, but I would agree with them on virtually everything. There are, you know, as I say, some differences, but those are differences between Austrianism and Chicagoism, and they're not really that pertinent in environmental economics. So you get very esoteric kinds of things where there are some slight differences.
Well,
but
sometimes
by and large, I think I subscribe to most of what they say.
But sometimes you will get, and I don't necessarily mean that school of thought, but you'll get people saying we should have tradable pollution rights, and that will simulate a market. In when it comes to pollution, and this does not pass muster with you at all.
No, it's sort of like tradable rape rights, or tradable murder rights, or tradable theft rights. In other words, if pollution is a trespass, a violation of property rights, then have tradable ones is hardly a libertarian solution. Now, it might be better in some sense than central planning, because you get some sort of quasi-market going here. But it would be sort of like market socialism versus real socialism versus private property rights. And maybe market socialism of the Hungarian type might be better than the Soviet heavy central planning. But both of them have to be rejected by true free enterprise types, such as libertarians. So I would say that would be one of the differences.
But now let's suppose we have an issue involving pollution of the ocean. Now, I can imagine a situation where, I mean, there's no logical reason you shouldn't be able to homestead a part of the ocean. If homesteading principle makes any sense at all, there's no reason it wouldn't apply just because some salt water happens to be there. But if that's going to be your answer to there's pollution of the ocean, well, therefore we got to privatize the ocean. Given that that's basically probably not going to happen, aren't we basically saying then libertarians have nothing to say about pollution, practically speaking?
Well, I wouldn't say we have nothing to say.
Well, it's a devil's advocate here.
You haven't met any libertarians if you think we have nothing to say.
Indeed.
Of course. We always have plenty to say about everything. You get into the sort of the second best. If you preclude, if you say, well, look, we can't privatize the oceans. That's a given. We stipulate that. Now what can we do? Well, then, you know, maybe tradable emissions rights or these Chicago-esque type solutions are better than non-ownership where you have the tragedy of the commons. But you sort of get into like this, like with Milton Friedman, this is sort of his career. He made a career out of coming up with second best solutions, like take education. The obvious libertarian answer is, you know, privatize it, and that's it. And his answer was, well, suppose you can't privatize it. Well, should we have school vouchers, or should we have, present situation? And now you get into very, very difficult issues. Well, are school vouchers an improvement over school socialism? Well, you know, there's something to be said on either side of that. But I think, and similarly in the environmental issue, is tradable emissions rights better than outright socialism or non-ownership? And these are very, very difficult questions. Whereas the libertarian answer is, what do you mean stipulate we can't own the ocean? What do you mean stipulate that we can't have private education? We can too. And Ron Paul talks about things like that, and that maybe not the oceans, but certainly private education.
Now, I want to ask you, because this is also an issue that has become sort of synonymous with you because you've thought so much about it. The issue and the objection that is raised sometimes by people you call our friend, you call very generously our friends on the left. I have other words for them, but these are people who will say,
I'm a nice guy.
No, you're Walter Moderate Block, of course, right. But they will say things like, you people are all hypocrites because you use the public roads and you use public libraries and you go to a publicly funded university. Whereas you take the opinion that we should not feel like hypocrites driving on the public roads. I mean, can you just once and for all clear this up? What is, I don't want to say the libertarian position because this is a debatable question, but where have you come down on this?
Well, I don't know that I can, you know, make the definitive issue. I've written about it on numerous occasions. But I'm sort of a fan of Ayn Rand on this, with her character Ragnar Danishcold, who attacked government ships and took the money from them and gave it to the heroes like Hank Reardon. Look, Murray Rothbard once said, if you look at the government as a robber gang, you'll get the idea of libertarians, or at least radical libertarians, toward the government. Well, let's stipulate that they're a robber gang and they took our money. And then they took our money and they used it for things like roads and schools and libraries and post offices and stuff. And now they tell us we can't use our own money and that we're hypocrites if we do? Well, I have to reject that. An issue came up with Ron Paul. Should Ron Paul accept matching funds? And I wrote about this on lourockwell.com. And what I said is, probably from a pragmatic point of view, he shouldn't take the money because people will call him a hypocrite. But as a matter of a principle, a matter of pure libertarian theory, they stole that money from him in the first place, and he's just getting some of it back. And even if he came from Mars and they never stole anything from him or his parents, still they stole it from other people. And it's not good that thieves keep their stolen goods. It's good that we liberate stuff from thieves and take it away from them. Give it to the victims, but at least the worst possible thing is that the thief keep his ill-gotten gains. So right. I don't see it at all as hypocritical to drive on a public street or to go to a library or to teach at a public school or go to a public school or any of that. I reject that totally.
All right, we're going to pick this up on the other side of this break. I'm going to take your calls. We got a whole bunch of them next on the Peter Schiff Show. Folks, this is Tom Woods in 2017 with a real commercial break, but here's a resource that is really going to help you in your professional life. Seems like every day there's something new to marvel about on the internet, and Skillshare is my latest one. I've been looking through this thing recently, and I cannot get over all the classes I myself would want to take. These are classes that'll make you more desirable as an employee, or better equip you to become a successful entrepreneur. With over 3 million members, and yes, more than 17,000 classes, Skillshare is the Netflix of online learning. You can take classes in graphic design, DSLR photography, social media marketing, digital illustration, and much more. And these are skills that will take you a long way. I myself am dying to crack into some of the courses in email marketing, social media marketing, SEO. I can always get better at these things, and I'm always interested in learning from people who know more than I do. Skillshare is the classic reminder that the internet is about more than cat videos. Join the millions of students already learning and growing their careers on Skillshare today with a one-month free trial for Tom Woods Show listeners. Head over to Skillshare.com/Woods. That's Skillshare.com/Woods. To start your free month of unlimited learning. And we're back on the Peter Schiff Show. Tom Woods in for Peter, joined by the great Professor Walter Block, walterblock.com, author of Defending the Undefendable, author of Have You Reached 500 Refereed Journal Articles, Walter?
No, I just passed 400. Thanks, Tom.
Because I know that's your goal, right? Is heading
yes,
toward
I'm
500.
I'm trying to hit 500.
That's right. So I can't even believe, what are you doing talking to me? You should be writing. All right, listen.
I'm having a lot of fun.
I want to give you 1 minute to tell us about your classic book, Defending the Undefendable, and say a little something about, I think there's a follow-up volume of it, and then I want to get to the phones because people have been waiting to talk to you.
Yes, Defending the Undefendable came out in 1976. I wrote it in the 70s. The reason I wrote it is I was having trouble writing my PhD dissertation on rent control. It was very boring, so I promised myself that if I did a chapter or a part of a chapter, I would give myself a whole day or two to do whatever I wanted. And for me, nerd that I was then and still am, what I would do is I'd write about what a great guy the pimp was or what a great guy the blackmailer was. And at the end of the dissertation, I had like 35 of these articles, and I put them together in a book, and it was Defending the Undefendable. And the idea there was to take the libertarian principle of non-aggression and ask who is hated and reviled and prohibited by law and yet doesn't violate the non-aggression axiom or the non-aggression principle. And those were the pimp and the drug legalizer or the drug runner or people like that. I have two or three, maybe more sequels to this book coming out. One of them ought to be coming out after November. It was ready to come out at the beginning of this year, but I decided that I'd better not publish it before November because, you know, I wouldn't want to embarrass Ron Paul because some of the things are pretty radical, and if he were running for president, I wouldn't want people to use this against him. But after the election is settled, and I hope Ron Paul becomes president, then I'll have no compunctions about publishing this book.
All right, very good. And also, people have said they learned a lot of economics in your book because you'll take on something like the speculator and explain what is actually the social function of a speculator. So it's a very useful book, but I want to go to the phones. Let's go to Rick right in your backyard, or at least where normally you would be. Rick in New Orleans. Rick, you're on the Peter Schiff Show talking to Walter Block.
Hi, greetings, Tom and Professor Block. Big fans of both of you. My question deals with, we've been seeing in the news a lot with the unemployment numbers in the United States and how that number is not really accurate. We all know that that there have been people leaving the workforce in droves and that there are actually more people out there not working. I started thinking about what are these people actually doing in order to survive, and they can't all be living off friends and relatives. And I was just wondering if we have any way of knowing, like, what percentage of people who are abandoning the workforce, looking to make their living in a black market, and whether this actually can end up supporting our cause against statism, and whether or not, you know, people seeking some indefendable employment currently is on the rise. Any comments on that?
It's delightful to hear a question from a fellow New Orleanian. I'm away for the summer, but hopefully when I get back to teaching at Loyola University in the fall, we can link up and discuss this more fully. But my understanding is that the official unemployment rate is something like 8 or 9%. The shadow unemployment statistics, which I think are more accurate, are maybe double that, 16 or 17%. And then if you look at subsections of the thing, like young black males, it's stratospheric, you know, 40 or 50%. I would say that what do they do? Well, some of them live on food stamps. Some of them live on crime. Some of them live on unemployment insurance, which I don't see how that helps, because the more you pay something to people to do something, the more you'll get of it. Supply curves slope upward. So if you're going to pay people to be unemployed, you're going to get more unemployment than otherwise. And I think also a black market and criminal behavior makes up some of the rest. I don't see how that helps us. The black market, if it's non-criminal, is good, but better to have the real market instead of a black market. So I see your point, and it's a very interesting one, but I think the way to go is to read Tom Woods' book, Meltdown, which explains exactly why we're in the problem that we're in now and how to get out of it. And it's based on Austrian business cycle theory of Mises, Hayek, and Rothbard. So I would highly recommend Tom Woods' book, Meltdown, on this very question.
Indeed, and you can Google, you can read Ron Paul's foreword to my book, Meltdown. So thanks for that plug, Walter. Let's go. Now, we are so tight on time, but I've got to get one more call in for you at least. Steve in Nashville, if you can make your question super concise, Walter will have a minute or so to answer it.
Oh,
Yeah, this is involving fractional reserve banking, and I think most of the Austrian thinkers agree with Jesus Orte de Soto that fractional reserve banking is fraud. They're loaning something that they don't have. But where we split is some favor free banking, and their biggest point is that this free banking has natural forces that force banks toward 100% reserve banking. But my point is that I think the free banking is kind of like saying, but we're going to allow as much fraud as the market will allow. And I just don't think we should do that. We don't do that with murder or rape like you were talking earlier. You see what I'm saying?
Oh, I hear what you're saying, and I agree with you entirely. Larry White and George Selgin are very, very good Austrians, but they sort of follow Murray Rothbard's rule. Murray Rothbard's rule is that people specialize in what they're in the worst in. Like, say, Milton Friedman was very good on minimum wage and free trade and rent control, but he kept talking about monetary policy, where it was very bad. Now, White and Selgin are very good on Austrianism, but they keep talking about the one thing that they're bad on, namely fractional reserve banking and free banking. I entirely agree with you that this is per se fraud, and it should be prohibited, and we shouldn't just rely on market forces to get rid of it. Market forces will. I agree with Larry and George that market forces will alleviate this, as market forces alleviate many things, but it's just, as you say, like murder or rape. Market forces will alleviate that too, but it still should be illegal.
All right. Thank you, Steve, for the call, and thanks to you, Walter. We're basically out of time, but I knew it would fly right by. I'm so grateful to you for getting up early in the morning out there in the West Coast, spending some time with us. I'm looking forward to seeing you also this summer. We had Joe Salerno on earlier this hour. Thanks again for the time, Walter.
Thanks for having me, Tom. It was a pleasure.
And this year, I'm going to crush you in chess with all those students
Uh-oh.
Watching. You
Uh-oh.
Just wait.
I'm in trouble.
Walter Block, everybody. WalterBlock.com. Defending the undefendable. And if you are a good Google searcher, or you go to Mises.org, M-I-S-E-S.org, you can actually find a free audiobook of that read by Jeff Riggenbach. You can actually listen to it in your car for free. All right, that's going to do it for today. If you're enjoying this show, don't forget to grab one of my free ebooks. It's going to help you debate better. It's going to teach you a lot about libertarianism. You can check them out over at tomsfreebooks.com, and I'll see you next week.
Become a smarter libertarian in just 30 minutes a day. Visit TomWoods.com to subscribe to the show for free, and we'll see you next time.